This is CliffCentral.com.
Becky was everyone's favorite. She was less skilled than the senior salesperson, Chris. Chris had been in the business for over a decade and knew sales strategy inside out. He could run circles around Becky. In an ordinary month, Chris's numbers would double hers. However, on the occasional month, Becky would lead the entire team, including Chris. Monir, the youngest and least skilled on the team, had no business outperforming Becky ever. But his enthusiasm for learning and systems would often trigger so much excitement in the consumer, he would literally light up the monthly sales report. Back to the star, Becky. As Becky's manager, she and I would sit in meeting after meeting discussing what she could do to change in order to reach her highest potential. There were two critical areas she had to change, I felt. Number one, she had to improve her time management. She was always late. But more importantly, when it came to the process, she needed to use less personality and more following the system. Because selling high-end men's fashion required following a systematic approach to ensure the resistance from these consumers was broken down. But Becky relied far too much on the gift of her personality. Change is difficult for all of us, and in retrospect, the advice I gave Becky when I was a 25-year-old leadership manager was not sufficient. When I left that job, I started my own business, the work that I'm doing now, around brain and brand science. But for a couple of years, Becky and I kept in touch. She never seemed to progress. Always the same old story, the complaints, the issues, not enough to feed her family. But as far as I know, even now, she has not reached her potential. And maybe it's all my fault. Welcome back to the Brain and Brand Show. I am your host, Timothy Maurice, and this is the show where we look at the science of how your brands impact your brain and how your brain can influence brands. Today's show explores the science of change, and I take you to MIT's Sloan School of Management and an executive course to find the answers. This past week, on a freezing cold, snowy morning, while studying neuroscience for leadership at MIT in Boston, I got the answers. I learned what I should have told Becky a couple decades ago. I learned about the art of change, how to get people to understand where the mental resistance comes from, and how to confront it. Dr. Ancona is the Selle Distinguished Professor of Management, a professor of organization studies, and the director of the MIT Leadership Center at the MIT School of Management. Her pioneering research into how successful teams operate has highlighted the critical importance of managing outside as well as inside the team's boundary. On this day in class, Deborah stood with the conviction of a lioness, and although she's well under 6 feet tall, just over 5 foot, her knowledge and passion tower convincingly. With a PhD from Columbia and the author of X Teams, a book about organizational leadership, she captivated the class. With students from all over the world, at my table alone, there were students from South America, Europe, and spread out across America. During one of the breaks, I was so moved I caught up with Dr. Ancona for her to share this breakthrough moment. Take a listen. What really struck me today was this idea, the research you shared about competing thoughts in the immunity for change. Can you share a little bit more about this?
Sure. The basic theory behind immunity to change is that when we want to make change happen, we say that we want to make change happen, and we do all these things to try to make change happen, but very often it doesn't work. Our ability to actually change is limited, and more often than not, it doesn't work. The immunity to change framework gets us thinking about competing commitments. That is, we have one foot on the accelerator of change, but our other foot on the brakes. That is, there are some things that we do to protect ourselves that inhibit our ability to actually change.
And how much does the environment and the spaces around us impact this sort of immunity to change as well?
Well, the environment is certainly plays a role because a lot of our assumptions remain hidden, and the way in which people tend to see us is in a particular way. So without even thinking about it, some of the people around us are actually inhibiting change because they have expectations of us and the roles we're going to play and the behaviors we're going to enact. And so we're nervous and scared about deviating from those said behaviors. So that's an inhibitory force, but so is our own thinking. The big part of immunity to change is not only the cultures that inhibit us and the other people around us, but our own thinking patterns.
For organizations to thrive, I know it's something you are very passionate about. The leaders should really champion this idea, really be open to finding out what their hidden commitments are and really going through this process. But for people at a lower level who are going, my leader is just not there, what can they do to sort of to begin this process?
Well, so there are different, we're talking about two different things, the individual and the organization. And so my point of view for the individual is that we can always improve. We can always do better. This is an economy in a world in which you may be switching jobs a lot. And so your ability to continuously change and develop and improve your skills is something that is a lifelong skill that you should take on no matter what your level, no matter where you are. You should be thinking about what's keeping me from moving ahead, how can I fight those demons, and how can I continue to develop as a person. That said, environments are not necessarily helpful in that process. And there, I think you have to sort of see if you've got a toxic leader, then maybe you want to put your head down for a while and not try to do too much if you're at a low level, because trying to change a power structure when you don't have a lot of power can be a difficult thing. On the other hand, what we see happening around the world in the face of toxic leadership are people coming together and saying, this is not okay. And that is also another part of what we teach in distributed leadership, that together getting people to try to push for change is another way to deal with the environments, the toxic environments that we have. So it really sort of depends on what you feel you are capable of doing and how you might engage not just yourself, but people around you.
We're really looking forward to tomorrow as well. So thank you so much.
Sure. Thank you. Great to have you in class.
I wish I had known about immunity to change theory by Keegan and Leahy, as shared by Dr. Ancona. The power of competing commitments, it's such a simple leadership tool, and self-change and self-mastery tool. Here it is broken down. Firstly, determine what is your goal. In Becky's case, it's to follow the system more and leverage personality a little less. Secondly, define what she is currently doing or not doing. In Becky's case, she was taking shortcuts and skipping steps in the sales system. Thirdly, decide what she is currently committed to or the thing that she is doing that she enjoys and doesn't want to let go of. And if she no longer commits to this area, how will she lose in a big way? This was the big revelation to me. I realized I also wanted to change how much I write. But I am committed so much to rest that I struggle to find the additional time, and that my commitment to rest comes from seeing my father work so hard. And in an early age, I had committed to an inordinate amount of rest. Basically, I do not need as much rest as I tell myself I need, but because I have committed to the rest, the change doesn't happen because I feel like I will become a negative side of what my dad became. So I tell myself I need to write more, but I am committed to not being the negative side of my father so much it keeps me from making the change. This is a very simple philosophy and approach. You're committed to something that keeps you from making that change. And the moment you identify that And then you really step up inside of you and create a vision for the thing that you want to do and acknowledge and reconcile with the other commitment, you can begin the process. When I think back, Becky wanted to be the funniest and coolest in this, and this competed with her following the system. Had I known, I could have taken her through the process of showing her the opportunities and dangers of not building a bigger and more inspiring vision for the competition in her head. Had she known that her wanting to be the funniest was getting in the way of her feeding her family, she would have found that following the system was probably as cool, and she could have constructed a new mental pathway to operate from. MIT's executive education programs are efficient and impactful. Dr. Ancona, she went so much further, and I'll share more in the coming days, in the coming podcast. She co-facilitated the course with the regular to this podcast, neuroscientist Dr. Tara Swart, and together they delivered a 1-2 punch that served precisely what you would expect from MIT. For more about MIT's executive studies at the school, Sloan School of Management, you can go to executive.mit.edu. Even now, as I produce this podcast, it comes on my birthday. That's right. You can send me a birthday message at, you can email it to me, timothymaurice@gmail.com. I have committed to understanding what are my competing commitments, which keep me from changing. I already mentioned one, but I have many. Join me on this journey as we create new neural pathways, channels in the brain that can override the influence of the old ones. Join me next week as we go a bit deeper to the brain and brand.
This is CliffCentral.com.